This week on the Country Music Media Podcast.
What changed in sports is that players started to gain control. And this is especially true in the NBA and the NFL. It's true too. It's a players' league. Years ago, guys couldn't even ask for a trade. They were more or less property. But slowly the salaries were used as a tool to shift the power. Owners, i.e. labels, resist that because, you know, they're the ones with the power, usually. But there's something that every artist can do to flip the script, and it would change the industry. Welcome to the Country Music Media Podcast. My name is Billy Dukes. If you found us for the very first time, welcome. Look around. Check out a few other episodes. Click follow on your favorite podcast platform, and then share a review at the end of the day. If you're returning for a new episode, really appreciate that. Make sure you've checked out Monday's episode with Dr. Jada Watson. Kind of a Grammy wrap-up. Get into that a little bit more. Some past episodes. Diving into album reviews. Top 10 list theory. I think in upcoming weeks, we're really going to dive into the ACM Awards. And then from there, Eric Church's new album. Find me on Twitter at Billy Dukes. You can also email me, billydukes@gmail.com. I like to carry on the conversation at Twitter and really value your feedback, not only with regards to the podcast, but just different topics in country music. I take those to heart and often bring them right here to the podcast. Thursdays are news and commentary, and, you know, it was all about the Grammys this week. Grammys on Sunday night, and it felt a little bit different, don't you think? You know, felt kind of had a little bit of a comedy club type setting with the tables all sort of spaced out, and then there was some side musical attractions sort of scattered throughout. An entertaining show, I'm not sure if I want every award show to be like that. I like the big energy, but I thought they did a really nice job. It was one of the better pandemic award shows. Vince Gill won a Grammy, no-showed, kind of a baller move. Dan and Shay won, they were nervous, like they were there in person. The High Women won a Grammy, which I don't think anyone saw coming. And then Miranda Lambert won the Best Country Album Grammy and really acted about as cool as you could imagine. Wasn't no panic with Miranda. You know, that's her second one in that category. The first was for Platinum, which I'd argue is her least best album. But the Grammys were the thing this week. And on Monday, Dr. Jada Watson, Data Jada on Twitter, joined us to discuss if what we saw on television with regards to country music is a reflection or a projection. And the answer is it was more of a projection. The radio numbers have inched toward the teens for a given year with regards to women in country music, and they're nearly halfway to double digits with regards to BIPOC artists. Of course, I say that sarcastically, knowing that is a pretty pathetic statistic. BIPOC, black, indigenous, and persons of color, but really it's just black artists because of all the other skin colors are near zero on a percentage basis. One more thing that stands out to sort of complicate this issue and shows exactly how hard it is to define people by the color of their skin and from there create graphs based on these demographics. This new guy, his name is Nate Barnes. He's got a song called You Ain't Pretty, and he was mentioned in a Pitchfork article about equality in country music. And he was mentioned as sort of a way of saying, see, everything just keeps getting whiter. The problem is, Nate Barnes, not white. Nate Barnes is biracial. You might not have guessed that had you had seen Nate Barnes. But he showed pictures. He's got pictures of his mom and his dad, and yep. He's pretty fair-skinned, to the point that if you're team Nate Barnes, you can't try to get your biracialness out there. I mean, someone was bound to take that L on the journalism side, and Pitchfork ended up taking that because Nate Barnes kind of looks like your average white guy. Now, maybe in person that's not the case. In these COVID times, you can't really tell. And I'm not going to try to speak to how Nate was raised and if he faced any kind of barriers that so many black artists have faced. But if he has a hit song, do you add him to this list of BIPOC artists? I guess so. But really, this whole thing isn't as much about where you came from or culture as it is about how you look and the stereotypes made because of how you look. And I'm not going to go deep down this rabbit hole because I already did as I tried to sleep the last few nights. But when you do, you realize there's no joy there. You know, this categorizing, you start to want to say, what is the point? And that's kind of when you realize that black men and women in America have been saying that for centuries. I often look at sports as a lens to see American culture and country music culture as well, particularly football, because I think that some real parallels exist. Take the NFL and quarterbacks. You really only had a handful of black NFL quarterbacks for most of the 70s, the 80s, and the 90s. You know, growing up as a child of the 80s and 90s, I knew Randall Cunningham, Donovan McNabb, Warren Moon. That's about all I knew of. Doug Williams I was a little too young for, or just didn't care about the Washington Redskins. I'm not sure which. Redskins, as they were called. The problem was, there was a system of stereotyping that forbid black athletes from playing the quarterback position. A quarterback named James Harris played for the Los Angeles Rams, and in 1974, he became the first black quarterback to start and win a playoff game. 2 years later, halfway through the season, he was benched by his team's owner, who explained the decision by saying, quote, "Unfortunately, the quarterback position is controversial enough without adding the element of color." He was benched because of the color of his skin. Owners, it seemed, didn't always want a black man to be the face of their team. You know, that started to change a little bit, maybe with Steve McNair in the mid-90s, but really it took to Mike Vick to change the position. I mean, after Vick came this group of more athletic quarterbacks who could run, and they did things different, and you know, these old fans, the old cats, they didn't like that. Your grandpa probably liked the drop-back passer who could, you know, step up, as they always say about Dan Marino. But without a doubt, the game's more fun now with quarterbacks like Patrick Mahomes, Lamar Jackson, Cam Newton. It's a better game. Country music isn't there yet. We're still in about 2005-ish, maybe 2007. So think about this. And if you're not a football fan, go ahead and fast forward a few times, and I'll see you in about 2 minutes. Generationally, Darius Rucker is Warren Moon. Even crossed over between leagues. Generationally, Kane Brown is Michael Vick the athlete. And I recognize comparing someone to Michael Vick comes with certain connotations, and that is not what I mean. He's a game changer, though. He changed the sound of country music, without a doubt. And there's no women in the NFL, which is fine because, you know, there's no black females having success in country music radio either. But as a genre, we haven't really embraced like a Lamar Jackson type, someone who's that far left of center sonically, based compared to what we've known for all these decades. You know, that might be like Breland or Lil Nas X. Where this analogy really starts to work, though, is when you look at how long it took teams to start their first black quarterback. Five teams started their first black quarterback after the year 2010. The last of them being the Giants in 2017, who started Geno Smith. The New York Giants. We got record labels who still not handed over the face of the franchise to a black man or a woman in 2020. So we're behind. But that's okay because we can learn, and this is the part that I hope you remember here. What changed in sports is that players started to gain control. And this is especially true in the NBA and the NFL. It's true too. It's a players' league. Years ago, guys couldn't even ask for a trade. They were more or less property. But slowly the salaries were used as a tool to shift the power. Owners, i.e. labels, resist that because, you know, they're the ones with the power, usually. But there's something that every artist can do to flip the script, and it would change the industry. Talk about the money. When an artist signs, report how much he or she received as a signing bonus. A signing bonus. These happen. I'm not sure how often, but Chuck Wicks had newcomer Andrew Janikos on his podcast. He's got a song on the radio that first sort of blew up on TikTok, and they joked on the podcast about a signing bonus. Lady Antebellum, that was the rumor when they signed, is they had a lot of competition between record labels to sign them, and the idea is that led to a fat signing bonus, or something similar. This would have been in back 2007-ish or so, long before they changed their name. What would happen if we knew how much? Think about it. Artist X signs for $100,000. 6 months later, artist Y comes along. He or she's white hot. He's going to want a little more. And you know how these things go. No one ever signs for less? What if we find out that black artist X, who on paper has the same metrics, the same heat as white artist X, is only being offered $50,000? Uh-oh. Show me the money. The money shifts the power, and that's really where any conversation about race is centered. It's about the power and who feels they need to wield it over who and why. When you cut a man a check right off the top, because you know you'll have to answer for it if you don't, that changes the relationships. It means you have a stake in the game. Labels will start looking at what works in the marketplace first and foremost, and be much more willing to break the formula. So Lil Nas X gets a shot on country radio. Kaylee Shore would have gotten a shot a long time ago. When the power shifted in sports, the locker room really started to look a lot different. Talent and true leadership got paid, no matter what it looked like. Show me the money. Andrew Janikos, Priscilla Block, both viral stars. Did they get equal signing bonuses? Willie Jones just signed to Sony. I hope he did all right. Let the people know and be like every athlete who gets the most money he or she can because they owe it to whoever comes next. I'll admit, this idea is kind of self-serving because it would be really, really fun to cover this in the news and on this podcast. But who are some other artists that might have done well or were in position to do well? Hardy. He was a really big songwriter before he signed as an artist, I believe. Parker McCollum. He was huge in Texas. So was Cody Johnson. They're not fools. Ingrid Andress, she was pretty coveted. I bet Sam Hunt was rich before he recorded a note for UMG. And he should have been. He should have been. By the Numbers this week finds Morgan on top again for a ninth straight week. That's Morgan Wallen's Dangerous, the double album that's number one, followed by two Luke Combs records. No new albums entered the chart. Streaming finds Morgan at number one with Wasted on You, followed by The Good Ones by Gabby Barrett, and Good Time with Nico Moon. Drunk and I Don't Want to Go Home by L. King and Miranda Lambert is the number one sales song once again, followed by The Good Ones by Gabby Barrett and Nico Moon's Good Time. Most added is Lady A, Like a Lady, and number one airplay is Parmalee and Blanco Brown with Just the Way. The number one hot country song is Gabby Barrett's I Hope. It makes 27 weeks for her. Monday on the podcast, it's Jaren Johnston, the lead singer of the Cadillac 3, followed by ACM Predictions with Angela Stefano the week after that. Big thanks to Data Jada for her insight into race and gender in country music on Monday. Her new study, published 1 week ago, is called Redlining in Country Music. Really a powerful reminder that there's just a long, long way to go. You can find me on Twitter at Billy Dukes. Email me at billydukes@gmail.com. Big thanks to Billboard for the charts, Taste of Country for the job, and Alyssa on Twitter for engaging. Let's keep that conversation alive over the weekend before we find out some songwriting and artist secrets from one of the most honest men in the business. Does a songwriter get paid if he doesn't do a dang thing but sit there? Jaren Johnston knows, and let's find out together on Monday during episode number 44 of the Country Music Media Podcast.